Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
That's what I'm talking about, Michael Heidemann. Give some groove to your Wednesday. Good evening. Welcome in. My name is Mark Harmon with you till 1 in the morning tonight. Good to be here. I had a wild day today. Many of you might know I work for a company by the name of Fansided. And I do videos over there. You can check them out on my Twitter, at the Carm. And everywhere else. I got a great Insta, the Carm 23. I'm still working on that one, Heidemann. It hasn't completely taken off yet. A Facebook, I'll friend you. I'm trying to get to 5,000 friends. It's one of my goals. But what's sweeping the social media nation right now is the chicken sandwich. And Popeyes just put out the revolutionary fast food chicken sandwich. And Chick-fil-A is very upset. Very upset, Chick-fil-A. They think that their chicken sandwich is the greatest chicken sandwiches in the history of chicken sandwiches. And then, of course, Wendy's has got their chicken sandwich. And then if you go old school chicken sandwich, or just chicken, period, where are you Kentucky Fried Chicken in the mix? How are you allowing your brand just to be run over? You're KFC, man. You're the Colonel. So I was driven around in the backseat of my car with a blindfold on, and we went to those four locations, and I was handed the chicken sandwich, and I was asked to rate the chicken sandwich. Now, I am a tad bit of a fast food connoisseur, although in these healthy days, I'm doing better. Had my physical last week. Doctor was very happy with me. Good cholesterol coming up. Bad cholesterol going down. I mean, everything's trending in a positive direction here. No diabetes. Getting married here. You know, I'm getting everything in order. I'm eating broccoli. Love a good greenery. I'll have a snow pea, whatever. But everything in moderation, right, Heidemann? You're a fan. Do you eat fast food?
Yeah. I've tried to slow it down.
Did I make you uncomfortable? Is that because you eat so much fast food?
I almost got choked up because I've been craving a Big Mac for like weeks now.
Oh.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
It's my downfall, but not. I really try to make food. So yeah, I'm trying to do the healthy route just like you, Carm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But sometimes, when in Rome.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know where you were going last night for the show. You were like darting out here at 10:30. You looked like you were on a hunt for candy or something bad. Admit it, Heidemann. You were leaving WGN right before the show to get a sugar high. I know you were.
I was. I went home and made a canned chili.
You went home?
Yeah.
Where do you live?
I live close enough.
Wow.
Bye.
Well, that's amazing.
Lower Wacker.
Okay. Listen, that's a fine area. We're going to get to chicken sandwiches tonight. That's going to be part of the program. My friend Brian Souter is here, and Brian is a reverend. You don't look like a reverend, Brian Souter. Is that wrong for me to say? Because you just don't. The standard reverend that I imagine is not you.
I'm a man of the people, Mark.
By the way, welcome to WGN. Thank you
for
being
on the show. Thanks for having me.
Now Brian is the executive director of Faith in Place. So we're gonna have a serious conversation to start out the show here, because you actually do a lot of good things for not only yourself and. People that you care about, but for the entire community that we live in here, the entire state of Illinois, and those of the surrounding states who are listening right now. So I'd like to first of all thank you for what you do over there. It's big time stuff. I mean, I'm here doing whatever I do, and we all have our jobs, but you're actually trying to give back, which is cool. So congrats.
Thanks, Mark. And I eat the occasional chicken sandwich.
You do?
As well.
Do you have a favorite?
Well, Popeyes.
Have you had it?
I haven't had the new one though. I like Popeyes. I like it more than Chick-fil-A. So I'm weighing in here, the Reverend's opinion tonight.
The Reverend is allowed to have an opinion on all things here. So how old are you?
I'm 35.
So how did you become a Reverend before we get deep into what you're doing?
Well, how much time do we have? So, you know.
We got time.
We got time.
We got time.
We got time to explore.
Yeah.
You know, I studied environmental sciences at the University of Illinois.
Okay.
Down in Champaign-Urbana.
ILL.
INI.
There we go.
Great town. Great town. Love the football team. I mean, as much as one can love the football team. And was there learning about environmental science. I grew up in a conservative Christian church community.
Uh-huh.
Always was a faithful person. Was learning about environmental pollution nationwide. Learning about how economically challenged communities suffer most from environmental degradation, impacts of climate change, lack of availability to local fresh food, disproportionate impacts of basement floodings on economically challenged communities. And I started to ask, wait a second. I say I'm a person of faith, a follower of Christ. I'm a person who serves the least of those among us. And yet I'm learning about this environmental science stuff and how impacts are negative to poor communities. How do I marry these two things together? So that, Mark, took me on a journey trying to answer that question. What does faith have to say about environmental science and the things that we're learning about what we're doing to our planet?
Now that's a pretty significant undertaking. I mean, you're just explaining being a college kid at the University of Illinois, and you seem like you were on the more focused path of not the, you know, the standard fraternity guy, but that's still, that's a pretty big jump right there.
It was a radical question to ask in my faith community.
I would assume.
It was a radical question, and it led me to seminary where I explored that question more fully. It led me eventually to the Mennonite Church down in Champaign-Urbana, and they supported me in this calling, and I became ordained as a reverend with the focus of serving ministry in the community, working on connecting these dots between environment and faith.
Is your family involved in the church? Or how did you get so interested originally?
Yeah, I grew up in Tremont, Illinois, down in central Illinois, small town, 2,000 people, farm community.
Okay.
And my family went to church regularly. It was a big part of our life and really shaped me, who I am.
Interesting. All right. I'm getting word from upper management that you want to be right close to that microphone.
Right.
Thank you, Michael Adam. Appreciate that. And Okay. So you grew up in it. Now, how did this, so now you're making a sort of a left turn from your family is what I'm hearing here. Is that accurate? Like a little bit or no? Were they like,
yeah,
you know, this makes total sense, Brian. Like, yeah, this is great. Go and do this.
No, this has always been a area of challenge. So coming from a farm family, you know, environmentalists are viewed as those people.
Right.
They cause the regulations. They're the white shirts from D.C. that don't know anything about what we do in the farm economy. And so it's been an ongoing discussion. And exploring ways where we can find common ground, middle ground, and take care of our common home. This is the water we drink, the common land we all share, the air that we all breathe, and finding common ground around those common things.
Well, and we're seeing it all over the world right now. I mean, Flint, Michigan is the poster child of it. They mess with the water up there. Here's an incredibly poor community, and how are they going to survive? You go drink this bottle of water because we just completely messed up your water system trying to, you know, whatever, squeeze every last dollar by doing fracking, whatever. That's what they were doing up there, correct? And all these people, what are they going to do?
Right. So, this brings us together. When we, talk about the environmental movement and we start talking about things that we all have in common, the water we drink, for example, like Flint, Michigan, this becomes an issue that we all care about deeply and all can work on together.
And how are we doing in Illinois?
Well, Illinois is primed to really lead on environmental stuff. Illinois is the largest state in the Midwest. The Midwest largely is, if you put us all together as a country, the Midwest would be the sixth largest country by GDP in the world. And so you can't tackle environmental problems without working in the Midwest. And you can't lead without working in the Midwest. So we're taking steps. We have our problems in the Midwest. We have our problems right here in Illinois. But the organization I'm running right now, Faith in Place, is taking leadership in solving these problems together.
So you're the executive director at Faith in Place. For those who don't know, what is Faith in Place?
Yeah, Faith in Place, our vision is that people of faith are leading the environmental movement. And so when people of faith lead the environmental movement, it's a movement focused on justice, access to local food, access to open space, preventing basement flooding in the community, reducing climate change carbon emissions right there in the community. So Faith in Place works with, it can be a mosque, it can be a church, it can be a synagogue, it can be a temple. If you are a place that's gathering on a weekly basis as a community of faith, our team will come partner with you and help you do environmental programming right there in your community.
So if you're listening at home right now or in your car or wherever, and you go to your church and you want to, that sounds like something I would love to be involved in. I'd love to make our water cleaner. I'd like to, I don't know, do you do cleanup projects? I mean, we got plastic floating all over. Exactly what do you guys do?
Yeah, so our model is that we partner with a faith community. So say it's a synagogue. We partner with a synagogue and we start what we call a green team. So we identify, you know, 5 people, 10 people in the synagogue who are interested in doing this in partnership with us. And that green team starts to meet monthly and explore what Faith in Place programs they can implement at their local house of worship. So we have programs from get an energy audit and reduce your energy cost in the synagogue there and reduce your greenhouse gas emissions. Or perhaps you want to do some green water infrastructure with us to prevent basement flooding in the community. Or maybe you want to start a local garden project to learn about local food and increase access to local, fresh, healthy food. We also do advocacy programs. Get to know your elected officials. Let them know how you're walking the talk right there in the synagogue. And let them know to do that on a statewide level to implement legislation to solve these problems and to lead.
So when you say advocacy work, are you who are the people that are actually in the organization? I'm hearing that are you taking people who are coming out of poor situations looking for ways to contribute that perhaps they couldn't get a job somewhere else?
Yeah, so, you know, these green teams we work with, we have right now currently 128 active green teams across the state. This is green teams that are located in Waukegan, the suburbs, right here in Chicago. We have a field office in Bronzeville, down in Champaign-Urbana, deep down in southern Illinois. So we're working with green teams that are diverse racially, they're diverse geographically, both rural, semi-urban, urban, and they're diverse religiously, because we're working with all people of all faiths to really lead the environmental movement towards this justice vision. And so these 128 green teams each have a green team leader. And this is kind of our organizing model. They are working with us to not only implement the programs in their community, but also to advocate with their elected officials around the issues that we're championing.
Brian Sauter with us here, the executive director of Faith in Place. He's also a reverend at the Mennonite Church in Garfield Park. Am I saying that right? Chicago Community Mennonite Church.
You got it. That's it.
Okay. So... And if anybody has a question, feel free, 312-981-7200 if you want to get involved. I know you guys have a Green Team Summit coming up here. You can check out the website, too, faithinplace.org, faithinplace.org. And on that front page, Brian's in the back there smiling pretty at you. But you look good. So tell me about the Green Team Summit.
Yeah, so like I mentioned, we have these 128 green teams. We're looking to add more green teams. So if you're a person... of faith that's at a faith community, you want to come learn more how to get engaged with their programs. We are celebrating 20 years as a non-for-profit organization at Faith in Place. So it's our big 20-year party. We have our founder, Reverend Claire Butterfield, is going to be our keynote speaker. We have workshops, so you can come in, you can get trained up in a workshop that you're interested in, maybe a food and faith curriculum, or how to start a green team, or advanced green teams, maybe how to do faithful advocacy. We have youth programming that you can do. We have a workshop on putting solar in your house of worship or on your residence, and other workshops as well that you can get trained up, learn more, get involved, help make a difference.
You can stick around for a second here?
Absolutely.
All right, then we got to take a quick time out. And for those texting in, including everybody at WGN who works here who's harassing me that it's Tuesday and not Wednesday, I apologize. It is very much, you're correct, it is Tuesday. It's not Wednesday. I don't know why. I feel like it's Wednesday. It's been a long week already. Quick timeout, 720 WGN. 720 WGN, happy Tuesday. Thanks for having WGN on tonight. My name is Mark Carman. The Reverend Brian Sauter is in studio with me to start the show tonight. Good to have you here, Brian. Good to see you.
It's good to be here, Mark.
So, before we get back to Faith in Place, I'm just curious, do you find it hard to get people to come to church nowadays? I mean... I sit in for sports on the morning show. Steve Cochran goes, I think, weekly. His son, Ross, is very involved. But I don't know. My sense is that it is difficult to get people that people maybe they have it in their own way, but to actually get them to come is perhaps not the same as it was back in the day.
Will you tell me, Mark, you go into synagogue on Saturday mornings?
That's not fair. You can't do that. I mean, my example is, I mean, I show up on the high holidays. I'm a big guy on Yom Kippur. I'm there. Rosh Hashanah, I'm there. But the rest of the year, I'm not there.
Right.
And I always actually, I enjoy when I go. I wouldn't call myself a super religious person, but whatever I am in there, it's a connection to my childhood a little bit. I hear the songs I heard as a kid, and it makes me feel like my I don't know, spirituality is kicked up, and it does feel nice. I think I would enjoy if I went more, but I don't make the time to do it, is the answer.
Yeah, well, I think you're nailing it. People are looking for connection, and there's no hiding the facts that religious attendance is down across denominations, across religions. But the faith communities that are making connections not only with people in their childhood, but connections, you know, that bring more community together with one another, connections to doing action in the neighborhood there around. And that's really what Faith in Place is about. We're about connecting with a local faith community, helping them understand an issue that we all care about, the air that we breathe together, the land that we all live on, where our food comes from, the water that we drink, and how to take tangible, measurable steps for what we call environmental justice in the community. This gets people excited. It gets young folks excited. It gets the older folks excited at the local faith community. And it brings kind of a vibrancy and aliveness to the worship and the work. The worship doesn't just stay in the four walls. It gets out into the community, and people are putting their faith into place. People are making a difference. They're connecting with one another while they do that. I got my start in seminary. I had this idea. I grew up in, you know, rural Tremont, Illinois, and we gardened a lot. And I hated gardening growing up. When I was growing up, you know, gardening was a chore. It was no fun. But when I was in seminary, I thought, wow, I know how to garden. I can bring people together outside. We get sweaty together. Our hands are dirty. And we can build connection with one another. We can start to ask each other more of the vulnerable questions. We can start to explore the meaning of life together and what our worship means every day as we go to work, as we play together, and as we're with our families.
It's beautiful, man. I love it. I love it. I'm also curious, I guess. There's the side that you're coming from, like, hey, let's do our very best to make the air, the water, and the plants, all of it better. And then I think there's, you know, a lot of people, when it comes to religion, they're like, it's in God's hands. Whatever will be, will be. And so I would assume in any one church or synagogue or mosque, there's got to be a lot of differing viewpoints of what, quote unquote, needs to be done.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what makes it fun, right, Mark? And it's part of why Faith in Place, we use this green team model. So we do identify first, when we're working with a house of worship, who are the interested people? And they come together. This is the person that really cares about the environmental movement, wants their faith community to do something more. And so we coach them. We start to work with them. Okay, you got to meet people where they're at. Not everybody's going to be with you right away. This is life, right? This is the game. This is how we need to work and make a difference. And so we have this menu of programs that we can then work with that green team. Maybe the faith community is not going to be ready to get involved in our advocacy efforts right away. Advocacy is controversial. Maybe it's too political for folks. But they might be interested in a garden project. Or they might be interested in learning more about why basement flooding happens in the community and steps that they can take. Or they might just be interested in saving money on their electrical bill at the house of worship and want to learn more how to do that. So you meet people where they are through the green team. And then you take them further throughout our programs. And pretty soon, before you know it, the whole faith community has integrated this sort of way of thinking into their overall worshipful life that they live out. And it's just part of who they are.
Well, now I want answers. How do we stop basement flooding?
There's a little hanger there. Yeah, you want to know. You want to know what's up. Yeah.
Yeah. How do I reduce electricity costs? All that stuff is...
Is what Faith in Place. And people want to get trained in this stuff. They can come to the Green Team Summit, hosted by the Field Museum, September 14th, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., keynote speaker, workshops. You can get engaged, get connected, and start to make a difference.
All right, hang in there. Let's do one more segment here, Brian, after the news, if you have the time. Do you have time?
I'm with you.
All right, let's get a check of news here coming up. And Brian will stick around after 11, 312-981-7200. If you want to talk to the Reverend, you can talk to him about anything. You want to, you know...
I'm here.
And I'm just going to open that up as a possibility for you to jump into. I don't know, Heidemann. Just because we got a reverend in here, we're going, I'm a soul man. You offended by this, Brian Sauter?
No, I love it. I fully embrace it.
Okay. All right. You're in, I'm in. Play louder, Heidemann. Let's go. This is... I don't know how many shows we've done together, Michael Heidemann. I know for myself that I've never had a reverend on the air with me. So this is a first, hey, Brian.
Right. Definitely a first.
Is it a first for you too?
We've had a few reverends on in my day, but never with the Carm.
But never with the Carm.
Mm-hmm.
And never as cool as Brian.
No, actually, he's a very, very cool guy. And yeah, your congregation must be very lucky to have you. Not many young reverends out there.
All right. Well, thanks, guys.
Did you hear what he just said?
I'm taking it in.
All right. That was a big time compliment right there. All right, let me ask you this. I know you're not a like quote unquote environmental expert. Would you call yourself an environmental expert? Yes or no?
I'm an environmental leader.
Okay, so I mean, how? I don't know what that means. Is that a yes or a no?
That's a yes.
That's a yes. That's okay, yes. So I mean, how dire? Because I hear from, if we don't do something in the next 10 years, and I'm like, did you not just see that Greenland is melting over there and that it was 7,000 degrees 3 weeks ago? And I know scientists are really, really smart people, but they're also scientists. They're humans. They can't know exactly what's coming. I mean, my sense is that things are in really, really bad state, and I don't even know if we can reverse it. So I'm curious your take.
Yeah, so let's talk about Illinois. What's happening right here in Illinois? We've got some unfortunate news. Illinois leads the way in having coal-fired power plants, particularly in economically challenged communities. Unfortunately, those are also communities that are communities of color. Because of historic environmental racism, coal companies place those plants in communities that don't have the political power. And as a result, there's more air pollution in the community. In fact, scientists tell us that the air pollution in those communities right here in Illinois is 4 times higher than in other communities. Asthma death rates are much higher because they're exacerbated by the high levels of air pollution in the community. I grew up with asthma. You know, asthma attacks, not something you joke around with. You can't breathe. That's a big deal. So one thing that Faith in Place is leading on is working with our faith communities on advocacy efforts to transition to a renewable economy, to get our electricity from solar energy, from wind energy, by doing energy efficiency work. We think that we can solve this problem that has a local impact right here in Illinois. Oftentimes, Mark, you know, you hear about the climate change and its worldwide impacts. That's true, and we have an urgency to act. But I don't think what people realize, oftentimes when we're sheltered in our communities, we don't realize this has impact today, right now, for communities in Illinois. And that's why action is so important.
So you're poor, you don't have a lot of clout, and you get stuck with a coal plant, and now you can't breathe. That's just nauseating.
That's right.
And it's really brutal. All right, here's my environmental plan. Let me see if you agree with what I think we should do going forward.
Okay, lay it on me.
I'm going to make myself the environmental expert for a second here at 11:09 on a Tuesday night on 720 WGN. All right, this is what we should do. First thing we got to do is we got to get rid of the fossil fuels in the electricity sectors, okay? So
sounds good so far.
All right, so we're getting rid of that coal plant that you're just talking about. We're going to stop. We're never building another new gas plant. It's all going to be electrical.
Great.
That's one thing that we got to do. And so coal, I would hope, would be gone in 20 years. I know this doesn't align with the office of the president right now, but that, you know, coal is great. No, coal is not great. It's actually horrendous. I mean, we need electricity transit. I don't think we're there yet, but buses, cars, and so we need policies that will accelerate that. I don't know. People who are super environmental, they can't drive an electrical car here in Illinois because there's not enough places to charge up. And if you don't have a garage in the wintertime, what does that car look like sitting outside? We need better. There's got to be investment in policies to encourage to do that. Are you with me?
I'm 100% with you. And in fact, I'm excited to tell you, this is a way that Faith in Place is leading with legislation right here in Illinois. You've heard of the Green New Deal?
Sure.
In Illinois, we have the real deal going on.
I read the real deal.
Let me tell you about the real deal.
Okay.
The first thing that happened in 2016 is we passed the Future Energy Jobs Act in the state legislature. This has put us on a path in Illinois to get 25% of our energy from renewable energy. That's wind and solar.
Is that enough? 25%?
It's not enough, but it was a start in 2016. Here's what interesting, cool, hip clergy did to make a difference in this. We said, great, we want to see renewable energy, but we're also interested in who gets these jobs. And as people of faith, we care about people who are coming out of prison. Or we care about the foster care youth who's bouncing from family to family. When they're the age of 21, they're emancipated from DCFS, and they're out in the street. They're highly likely to go to prison. And we know, and I don't know if you know this, but 1 out of every 3 people who come out of prison return to prison within a couple of years' time when they come out. And it's because they don't have access to job opportunities, a salary, a schedule, a wage, security.
Support,
you know, all these sort of things. And this is something we see in our faith communities all the time. And we know the access to good jobs. So we're thinking, wow, if we are building the green economy, the real deal right here in Illinois, why don't we have that economy benefit the communities who suffer most from air pollution, who suffer most from asthma, death rates because of that air pollution. And so we created what was called the Solar for All program in Illinois. Clergy came together and said, we want to see 2,000 jobs for people coming out of prison, foster care alumni by 2030 in the solar economy. And we hung on to that in the legislative sausage-making process down in the State House in Springfield, and we launched the Solar for All program. $30 million to train people, $200 million to incentivize companies to hire them.
Who's paying for that?
These is ratepayers. So it's people paying, you know, on your electric bill. There's a little fee that comes off that helps make this new green economy possible. A report was just released here in July. The ICC released a report, the Illinois Commerce Commission, celebrating the fact that we have trained 386 people so far. 47 of them are people coming out of prison. Over 90% of those have been placed into full-time jobs. We're really making a difference right here in Illinois. But it's not enough. So we're working on a campaign called the Clean Jobs Coalition. Faith in Place is a leader in the Clean Jobs Coalition. Well, we have legislation pending in Springfield for 100% renewable energy for Illinois by 2050. Has provisions in there for electric cars, helping update our infrastructure so all of us have electrification of the grid like you're talking about. We move and we decarbonize our sector, so no more coal plants causing air pollution. We have more renewable energy jobs. We have more wind jobs. We have more energy efficiency jobs. We're getting those jobs back into the communities that suffer from high unemployment, getting those jobs to people who are coming out of prison, preventing re-entry into prison because of that. That's saving the state money. That's a good thing for all of us. And we're leading the way in that fashion.
Is there momentum? Do you feel momentum within the legislature to get this done?
We're so excited. We have a majority of co-sponsors on the legislation.
Okay.
We're heading towards what's called veto session this fall, where the legislature comes back into session. Governor Pritzker, when he was campaigning, he endorsed this cause, 100% renewable energy by 2050. So we have his support. It's just a matter of getting it done and across the finish line at the State House.
I mean, legalizing marijuana is great, and it's cool that we're going to have more casinos, but this seems a little bit more important.
This is real jobs, real communities where people are suffering, create new opportunity, new hope. This is what Faith in Place is all about.
Yeah, and I can hear, you know, somebody out there, well, why do you care about the people coming out of prison? Give those jobs to people who didn't go to prison. But that's this is part of, I'm assuming, the faith in humanity, and you're looking to give back to people who need it the most, perhaps. Is that
right? Absolutely. And we all have different backgrounds. We're born into different situations, have different opportunities. And sometimes when you're born into a situation where you're foster care youth, it's rough. And you're probably likely to do something illegal, and you're probably likely to go to prison because of this. This is a way to build the structure, give the support, get it back, get people employed, build the economy, and reduce recidivism, curb climate change, all in the same process.
Right, and maybe you sold a bag of marijuana and you ended up in jail. Doesn't mean you're a terrible person.
Exactly.
I mean, bad choice, shouldn't have done it, but I mean, come on. Can you tell a story of somebody who came from, who got out of prison and joined your organization, Faith in Place, and is on a beautiful path now?
Well, we have a lot of these stories. So one thing we were celebrating was the 49, we call them returning citizens, people that are returning back in to the community for foster care alumni. So each one of them has a unique story, a story of a discovery. I'll tell you, here's what's happened is, as we've worked with these training programs, people come through and we meet people where they are. Sometimes you need to get a suit. Sometimes you need to get a haircut. Sometimes you got to get your LinkedIn profile up to date. Sometimes you just need a community of people, your people from your faith community, to come around and support you to make it happen so that you're showing up on time for the job, making this a reality. So Faith in Place has really led the way in both recruiting people into the program and providing long-term support for people so that they get placed in the long-term jobs and turn their life around.
It's awesome. Reverend Brian Sauter with us here, the Executive Director of Faith in Place. 312-981-7200. If you want to ask Brian a question, phone line, text line. 773 is texting in. What about the air pollution around O'Hare Airport? Is that something that you're focused on?
This is something we call an environmental justice issue as well. So when we talk about environmental justice, we're talking about disproportionate impacts for people and communities of air pollution, of toxic dumping, of basement flooding. We call it food scarce neighborhoods, where the only, you know, store on the corner is a store where you can't get fresh, local, healthy food. Maybe you don't have transportation to get to where you need to get that access to that local, healthy food. These are what we call environmental justice communities And this is something that we're definitely working on and focused on. And we do it by partnering with the local faith community. This is an institution within the community that we help urge and inspire on to put their faith in place and to do the work so that we can make a difference.
So how do you get a business to invest in that in putting their products, Whole Foods or whatever, in that area?
Well, we do it,
or maybe I'm simplifying that down too much. I don't know what I don't know. How would you answer generally where I'm going there?
Well, I would say by any greens necessary. So that's what we do. We, you know, when part of our advocacy program is putting pressure on, raising awareness about these issues, making sure that we're overcoming these issues together. And you know, when we first started doing this work at Faith in Place, we started an advocacy program. I was involved in that about like 2010, 2011. You know, at first legislators were like, wait. Your people of faith, your clergy, you're coming to me and you're talking to me about environment. You know, they were puzzled. They're like, but they weren't connecting the dots yet to see how environmental justice is related to air pollution. It's related to the just economy. It's related to mass incarceration. So as we started to connect the dots, now when we roll in and meet with legislators, like, oh, you're people of faith. You're here to talk to me about environmental justice, making a difference in the community that benefits people's lives.
Very cool. 773 texting in, does all the construction with steel and glass around the lake in downtown, which eliminates natural runoff but adds to taxing the deep tunnel which floods down the river to downstate towns, does this add to global warming? Does that make sense?
Well, a couple of things there. Let's first talk about the infrastructure. So as a city, we invest in infrastructure that takes, when it rains, all the rainwater into the stormwater system and takes it away. That's why, you know, our basements don't flood. And so when you have communities where the city historically has disinvested over time, say you had the King riots in the 60s on the west side of Chicago, and so the city pulled out resources at the time to say, look, you know, if you're going to riot, we're going to pull out city resources. So the stormwater system infrastructure there is not as good as it is elsewhere throughout the city. So when the stormwater infrastructure is good and it rains, that rain means you have more likely basement flooding happening in the community. And here's the problem with climate change. Climate change means it rains harder, quicker, faster when it rains. So you get a heavier rain, you get more stress on the stormwater system, and then it backs up into people's basements.
See, I was here. Let's take a quick time out. We'll do one more segment. One more, then you're out of here.
All right.
Quick time out, 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Mark Harmon with you until 1 this morning. I will be back in the morning. Going to sit in. Steve Cochran is off tomorrow and Thursday morning, so I'll be in with Ji Soo Ki, Dave Bennett, Mary Vandeville, Steve Krasanich. Have some fun in the morning. Looking forward to that. The Reverend Brian Souter, the Executive Director of Faith in Place, kind enough to give us some time tonight in studio. You were telling me a story about a church who started a four-acre farm and is giving back beautifully. Why don't you let us in on that story?
Love to tell you that story. So, you know, Faith in Place, we empower faith communities to make a real tangible difference in their neighborhoods for what we call environmental justice. This was a Lutheran church in the city of Urbana, St. Matthew Lutheran Church. They had 4 acres that they were putting in corn and soybeans, you know, hiring a farmer to come in to harvest every year, giving away the profits, good stuff. But we were looking at with them at that acreage and saying, what else can we do? You know, it was in East Central Illinois, big problems around food scarcity, access to local healthy food there. You know, what we had this idea, what would happen if we started to grow fruits and vegetables on this acreage and tithe, gave away 10% of the produce to the local food pantries and hired up a farmer to farm the rest of it, you know, make a sustainable business model out of that. So we moved, Mark, at what we call the speed of church. The speed of church is slow, okay? So, you know, you show up in one committee meeting at the church. They're like, no, you're in the wrong committee meeting. You need to talk to this committee. Well, when's that committee meet? Not till another 3 months. So we were moving at the speed of church with this idea. And over the course of 2 years, we launched what we called Sola Gratia Farm. Sola Gratia Farm hired up farmers, totally transformed that lot, that 4 acres, growing fruits and vegetables, partnered with the Eastern Illinois Food Bank to give the fruits and vegetables to them. They then put it into local food pantries. People in the church community started to go to those local food pantries. Now they're doing like cooking classes, canning classes. Here's how you know, what do you do with a tomato once you have a tomato type of thing? Increasing access to local healthy food.
Eat it.
And
yes,
it's a sustainable business model for the church as well. So they're really putting their faith into place. And now they're known in the community as not the church that, you know, went through that split so long ago, or the church that has all these different things going on, but the church that's giving back in a real tangible way to the community, making a difference. Now, that story is pretty inspirational, but what we've done at Faith in Place is we're like, wow, we've learned a lot in this. We have hundreds of other faith partners across the state. So out of that one first farm that we launched, we've launched four other similar type of farms all across the state of Illinois. We have this vision of how can we increase all this access to local food, healthy, you know, sustainable practices, job opportunities for young farmers who are looking to get into doing local farming, but they can't afford the land. You know, our faith communities have land, and they have the opportunity to grow local food, make a real difference in their communities, and change the world.
What's your message as we wrap up here on changing the world to just the standard human, I think, condition, for lack of a better way of putting it? We want what we want, and we want it now. We don't want to think about what we need in 30 years. I mean, I guess people are getting better at putting money in their savings account to a point. But when it comes to the environment, I want that cheeseburger. I want to have that bottle of water. I want to buy my coffee every day at Starbucks and throw the away the cup. And so in order to really do this, we're going to need to inconvenience ourselves some if we're really going to make a difference. Like, how do you get that message out there? Because I think there is, people in theory would love to have everything. Sure, I want clean water and fresh air and want to live like that. But then the human thing that we want it now and we want it for me, there's also that side of it. There's a push and pull there.
Yeah, I totally hear what you're saying, Mark. Here's what works for me. Is getting involved with other interesting people, getting connected with them. So that's the cool thing about Faith in Place, is you're bringing together Muslims, Jews, Baha'i, Christian, Catholic, Mennonite, like myself. You know, you're coming together, people from rural Illinois, semi-urban Illinois, urban Illinois, coming together in one room, people who are racially diverse. That sort of energy is really inspiring. And pretty soon you start to see other people are doing this and you get inspired to do that. So it's positive action just really builds off that sense of community. It's exactly what Faith in Place does. And I got to invite you all to come to experience this for yourself. I'm telling you, at the Field Museum, September 14th, on that Saturday, will be a room of diverse people from all over Illinois, excited to get involved in workshops to learn how to make a difference in the community. It'll be an inspirational event that will help us accomplish that vision.
Green Team Summit, does it cost money?
It's free to come, $5 for lunch, and it's going to be a great time.
$5 for lunch? That's a steal.
It's a steal of the deal. Plus, you get a free pass to the Field Museum for the day. So come get a workshop, learn more about environmental racism, learn more about solar panels, get engaged, get inspired, and visit some great exhibits at the Field Museum.
Faithinplace.org is the website if you want to learn more. September 14th, the Green Team Summit. Brian, great to be with you. Thanks for coming in.
Great to be here, Mark.
All right, quick time out. We'll get checking news. That's Brian Sauter, Executive Director of Faith in Place. We appreciate his time. And Vic will have your news in 2 minutes on 720 WGN. That ain't nothing but a chicken wing. All right. The world that we live in gets crazier by the day. Just remember today's news. I don't even want to go into the news. Let's just go into the fun area of the world, which is the chicken sandwich right now. Mark Harmon with you on 720 WGN. Michael Heidemann producing. Vic Vaughn's in news. I brought in a resident fast food expert who we'll get to in a second. But so, okay. Popeye's chicken and biscuits. Number one, as we started off the show, Michael, you identified yourself as a fast food connoisseur.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any better product out there than the biscuit at Popeye's Chicken? Have you ever just the biscuit, the buttery, savory biscuit that if you were getting it at the Drake Hotel on a Sunday afternoon, it would not taste better than the biscuit at Popeye's. It just wouldn't.
If you switched them out, the Drake and the Popeye's biscuit, I'm sure that I wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
Right.
But I don't know if I'd land on the Popeye's biscuit as the best thing.
What would you land on?
We're talking biscuits here?
Well, no, I'm talking like any. I'm just talking about like an elite fast food thing that doesn't taste like it's fast food. It's just so damn delicious.
Ooh. Oh, man, that is a tough one.
That's how I got to the biscuit.
Yeah. No, I see what you're going for.
It's a tough one here, I know.
There's a lot of great choices out there, especially with what we've done in the last, like, 5-10 years with food innovation as far as what we've been brought. There's I just was thought about this. The McDonald's headquarters, which is in the West Loop,
yeah,
that giant megaplex of McDonald's. You can get food from all over the world, and they have this Canadian bacon burger that was just out of this. It didn't even seem like it should be anywhere near McDonald's. It should be on like a silver platter or something like that. So I'd put that up against the biscuit. But then again, that buttery biscuit from Popeyes is pretty darn good.
All right, so here and okay, fair, good answer. Liked it. Let me rewind here. I think I got to set this up again. Popeye's chicken has never had a chicken sandwich. They've had a delicious two-piece, a delicious three-piece, a delicious four-piece, phenomenal mashed potatoes, phenomenal biscuit, but they've never had a chicken sandwich. And so what they've done is they have come out with the chicken sandwich. And they tweeted saying, you know, going right at Chick-fil-A. And Chick-fil-A got super upset. And Chick-fil-A's tweeting back, bun plus chicken plus pickles equals all the love for the original. Like, they're acting like, you know, ours is the original sandwich. And then Wendy's, so now Popeye's has this new chicken sandwich. Chick-fil-A's all upset. Wendy's jumps in. Y'all out here fighting about which one of these fools has the second best chicken sandwich, because Wendy's thinks their chicken sandwich is the best. Now, and then Popeye's is tweeting back out, sounds like someone just ate one of our biscuits because y'all looking thirsty. And so the chains are going back and forth at each other. So my day started out, well, we got to get to the bottom of this. So I got in a car. I put on a blindfold. I sat in the back of my own car, had people driving me around, and I didn't know where we were going. Now, I'm a tad bit of a fast food connoisseur. So when we went to the first place, and I just want to be honest here, full transparency, I said, I'm gonna need a soda for... to get through my stomach's not going to be able to handle all this chicken going on.
Palate cleanser, right?
Right, palate cleansing situation. So I knew once I grabbed the first soda, I knew I was drinking a Wendy's Sprite. I just knew it. I had a little bit of an edge, like this sandwich, and you can tell with Wendy's, like it's always the one piece of lettuce in there. So, but my first sandwich was the Wendy's chicken sandwich. And I normally get the spicy chicken at Wendy's. But this Wendy's chicken sandwich, I'm telling you, was flat out delicious. It was incredible. I'm like, oh my God, this is phenomenal. Next stop we go, I get this hockey punk, nasty, disgusting sandwich. And I'm thinking to myself, is this Popeye's? Because if it is, it's just a complete fraud. Now, I got a resident fast food expert in the studio here, Adam Phillips. How many times a week do you eat fast food?
Probably at least twice.
Okay, twice a week, that counts. Do you have fast food today?
Taco John's
today. You're qualified. Do you have any guess as to where this terrible chicken sandwich came from?
Burger King.
Burger King's is awful. It's
terrible.
True, but it wasn't. Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Oh yeah.
Horrendous. I thought I was getting it from 7-Eleven.
But the Nashville Hot Sandwich from Kentucky Fried Chicken isn't bad.
Okay, well, this was just a disappointment. You're Kentucky Fried Chicken, you have a terrible chicken sandwich. That's not okay. Next stop we go, and I don't know where we're at, but I get handed this thick, soft bun, big piece of chicken, and I bite into it, and it is flat out delicious. And I'm like, this has got to be it. It has to be it. And then the fourth one, I'm eating it. I'm like, I used to like this, but it's not that good anymore. So the fourth one was Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A is like massively overrated.
I'm with you, 100% overrated.
Overrated.
Yes, absolutely.
I
don't get Chick-fil-A. It's overrated.
It's thin. It doesn't do anything. It's not that juicy.
No.
Wendy's 10 times better. 10 times
hands
better.
Down.
And then, but the I'm just telling you,
the Popeyes
chicken sandwich,
the best.
is incredible. You've had it?
Yes.
When did it's only like out like 2 weeks now.
Yeah, just a few weeks.
So you heard the news and you were
I tried. I'm a Popeyes fan.
I mean, Popeyes is. Have you had it yet, Michael Heinemann?
I have not, but I'm getting so hungry thinking about it.
I want to get in here. 312-981-7200. Best fast food sandwich, and have you had the Popeyes chicken sandwich, and do you agree? Is it the best chicken sandwich out there? 312-981-7200. Now, and for the record, I think fast food is disgusting. I think it's I feel gross when I eat it. However, every night when I leave the studio, I want to drive through McDonald's. I want. Mm-hmm. Do you consider Portillo's fast food?
Ooh, that's a Ah, that's like the sweet spot right in between like a real restaurant and fast food.
Yeah.
See, depends on what you get.
See, I would say no, but if you do go to Portillo's and get a cheeseburger, that's a fast food cheeseburger. All day fast food cheeseburger.
Or do you consider any of the drive up fast food?
See, I don't. If I go to Boston Market, to me that's not fast food. Subway is not for me not fast food.
Oh, Subway's definitely fast food.
But it's not. It's not like put on this bad like heat lamp, whatever nasty. There's just. It's of the sub sandwiches fast food. Is Jimmy John's fast food?
Yes.
Oh come on.
It's freaky fast. It's in the name.
But come on. I see. I give more credit to the sub sandwiches. Jersey Mike's. That's not fast food. Fast food is Burger King, McDonald's,
Sonic,
Popeyes, KFC, nasty, disgusting. Wendy's. You eat it every day. You're gonna die 10 years younger, most likely.
What about Hooters?
Hooters is not fast food.
No, I agree. It's
Hooters,
gourmet.
Chili's, come on.
Gourmet, he says.
Gourmet.
Gourmet Hooters. Gourmet Hooters. Let me look. 312-981-7200. And the Tribune, by the way, has out the 26 fast food chicken sandwiches. They ranked them. The number 26, the McChicken at McDonald's. McDonald's chicken sandwich is disgusting.
It's boring.
It's that was a good rating.
The
good
single
job.
Pickle is just gross. Yeah.
I didn't even notice a single pickle. The 25, the original chicken sandwich at Church's. Who the hell goes to Church's?
Church's is good, but you only get them on the south side.
Churches is good. Mm-hmm. All right, maybe I'm wrong. All right, let me get a couple people in here. 312-981-7200. Ron, it says chicken. What do you want to say about chicken, Ron?
You know what? I think for the last maybe 5-6 years, it was simply Wendy's spicy chicken. Oh, loved it. Loved it. But
right?
Now the Popeyes chicken has actually been out, I know where I live, maybe about 2 months. Oh, my God. I was telling my wife, it's
unbelievable,
it's
right?
Different. But, you know, the first time I had it, because it's a little thicker.
Right.
And, obviously, I was so used to Wendy's, so the first time I had it, I was like, no, I don't like this. I'm going to stick with Wendy's. But then after that, I went back and got it. So, you know what? Hands down, oh man, you know, and you can get it either spicy or original, but that Popeyes chicken sandwich, hands down, is the best. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Ron. I mean, it's a religious experience.
We just had
the Reverend in here. I couldn't believe how good it was.
I had a quick question. Is there a sauce on it that is making it so well, or is it just like really, really just great?
I just think
fried.
It's
the batter. The Popeyes batter they have.
That might be it. Hang on. Let me read to you because this was kind of amazing. Where the New Yorker did a piece on this piece on the Popeyes chicken that will sum this up better than I ever could. Let's hear. Let's do a quick timeout. I'm going to take some more calls. 312-981-7200. I'm going to read to you the way they sum up the Popeyes chicken sandwich. It's brilliant literature. We'll do that next. 720 WGN. That's right. Talking chicken. Delicious chicken right here on 720 WGN. Popeyes has a new chicken sandwich out, sweeping the nation. Tribune's doing ratings of chicken sandwiches. Number 24, the spicy chicken at Checkers. Who goes to Checkers? Phillips, you go to Checkers?
No, I don't know.
Oh, see, the Mr. Fast Food doesn't even go to Checkers. Heidemann Checkers?
Twice last week.
Are you serious?
No, I'm not. I've never actually even seen one, to be honest.
I went to a Checkers way back in the day, but that was like, we're talking 20 years. all right, before I read this stuff from The New Yorker as they describe the perfect fast food chicken sandwich, I just want to get Eddie in here because he's been very patient. Eddie, welcome to WGN. Let's talk chicken.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, Eddie. How are you?
Good. I'm stuffing my face, not with a chicken, with a combo from Johnny's in Elmwood Park. Not trying to plug, but if I could have got a chicken sandwich from Popeyes tonight, I would have. They say they're open till 1, but every time I go to, this one's pretty much only been open maybe a year. Every time I go there after work, they're always out. Why are they always out? I don't understand. The first time I got one, it was phenomenal. I got it during the day, different location. I go to this location. One night I actually ended up getting one, and it was horrible. And then I went there a couple other times after that, and they were out.
See, you're hitting on actually a very interesting point here, Eddie. The variance in quality of different McDonald's, Burger King's, Popeyes, whatever. Like, some, they're on their game, and others are not. I mean, that's a veteran fast food person who knows that that is the best McDonald's. This is a real thing you're bringing up, Eddie, and I think it's very important.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I got habits. I like certain places. They got good work ethics. I like to, you know, frequent those places. They're clean. They got good food. So you keep going back.
Right, right. All right. Appreciate you, Eddie.
I was going to say, it's a spicy mayo.
Yeah, okay. Well, here. You'll like what I'm about to read, Eddie. Thanks for the phone call here. So the New Yorker does this piece, and they're talking about the Popeye's fried chicken sandwich. Like Popeye's fried chicken.
Do you need some music, Carm?
Yeah, sure. Let's get some music. The chicken sandwich comes in two versions, classic and spicy, both of which are beautifully simple. They both arrive in a foil-lined bag. The better to keep the sandwich piping hot, its optimal eating temperature. They both have the same bun, buttery, sweet, light. They have the same pickles, sizable rounds of cucumber crisp with vinegar. And they have the same exquisite slab of chicken breast, hefty and juicy and snow white in its crenellated armor of that uncommonly crisp fried batter. I can't believe this is written about a chicken sandwich at a fast food place. This is incredible writing. There's regular mayonnaise on the classic, on the spicy sandwich, which our guy just mentioned, which, to the writer's mind, is slightly better. The mayonnaise is spiked with cayenne. Both sandwiches stick the landing on the most important element of a fast food sandwich. The fusion of its distinct components into an ineffable, irresistible gestalt. The salt, the fat, the sharpness, the softness, together, they're what flavor scientists might describe as high amplitude. A combination so intense and so perfectly balanced that they meld into one another to form a new, entirely coherent whole. I feel like I just had sex. That was amazing. Now, I mean, can you believe it? Can you believe that was written?
I don't. Sticks the landing.
The New Yorker out of nowhere. I mean, this is some strong stuff.
How high was that writer when he was really diving into that sandwich?
Right. I mean, he really went for it there. But I would not have thought that my day would have been dramatically altered because I had a fast food chicken sandwich. But it was. Let's see if we get any text here. 312-981-7200. Hi. Great show. Culver's has a good spicy chicken sandwich. Chewy. Phillips, you're shaking your head. No,
Culver's is not.
I mean, I'm going for the butter burger. If I'm going to Culver's,
right.
I'm getting the custard. I don't know, but okay. To each his own. People are supporting the throwdown on Chick-fil-A. See, like the first time I had the Chick-fil-A sandwich, I thought I had uncovered something. But it's kind of like it just loses credibility over time.
It's like, boring.
It's boring. It's a great chicken sandwich for like a fifth grade assembly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But we're adults here.
It's a thin little patty.
Yeah, I mean, it comes up short. Tribune, let's just do the rankings here. 24 is the spicy chicken at Checkers. 23 is the crispy chicken sandwich at Dairy Queen. 22, the big chicken at Checkers. I think the Trib's cheating a little bit here. You get one item per establishment. You can't do like 7 is the spicy at Wendy's and 6 is the original. No, just pick a chicken sandwich, but okay. That's just me. Let's see here. Hold on. Number 20 is the... Oh, number... Okay, here we go. Number 20 is the chicken ring slider at White Castle. I can't believe it. I can't believe that made it to number 20. That's disgusting. That's got to be last. 19, buttermilk crispy chicken sandwich at McDonald's. Okay. The crispy chicken sandwich at Sonic is 18. The Nashville hot crispy kernel sandwich meal at KFC is 17. I got to take a quick time out. We'll continue with the list after the news, but I don't want to be late for news. Good job, Tribune. Way to rank chicken sandwiches. That you guys should get a raise for that. I appreciate it. You're doing God's work. 720 WGN. 720 WGN. We got 1 hour to go here until Nick D takes over. Mark Carbon with you. Hope you had a great Tuesday. Now, good morning to your Wednesday. Started the show about 90 minutes ago. Said happy Wednesday. Didn't even know what day it was. That's not a good sign. I had a freak out today that I was... I don't know. I read some terrible story about somebody getting sick, and I was worried I was getting sick. I was doing all sorts of tests on myself. Who doesn't? Do you do that ever, Heidemann? Where you think just something's got to be wrong?
Oh, where you start to... Yeah, especially with you having a wedding coming up.
Right.
You have to do all these morning shows and everything. I panic all the time.
And then I'm like, well, just don't do this. Mm-hmm. Don't do this. Just do a push-up and go on with your day. Come on.
Usually a shower helps.
Yeah. I want to, before I get to this climate thing that we're doing, and don't worry, it's not the deep climate talk that scares some people. We're just going to have a little bit of fun here. But I just want to wrap up the chicken sandwich list here. We left off at number 17, according to the Tribune, was the Nashville Hot Crispy Kernel Sandwich Meal at KFC. First of all, Tribune, don't be putting meals in there. We're just talking about sandwiches. Somebody's got... I got to call over to the Tribune. Maybe they need me as an editor over there. Chicken breast slider at White Castle is 16. I'm just not on board with who's doing this list. The chicken breast slider at White Castle, you couldn't pay me to eat that thing. That's not true.
Terrible.
You could pay me, but
it's absolutely terrible.
I mean, come on. The classic chicken sandwich at McDonald's is 15. I don't think that's true either. The crispy chicken sandwich at Burger King, 14. The spicy crispy chicken sandwich at Burger King is 13. See, now just pick one sandwich. The double crunch at KFC is 12. Didn't you say you like the double crunch?
Double down.
Fast food expert here in the studio. The 11, the crispy chicken sandwich at Culver's, that makes it in line with one of the texts that came in. So you got you were verified. Is that a word that fits there? I'm not sure. Probably not. But you were validated. That's what I was going for. Thank you. Number 10, the homestyle chicken sandwich at Wendy's. Wendy's chicken sandwich is delicious. Flat out delicious. Mm-hmm. The crispy kernel sandwich meal at KFC is 9. I don't like this list. Spicy chicken at Chick-fil-A is 8. I'm not into this list. number 7 gets cut off here. It's some sandwich at Popeye's. Number 6 is the big chicken fillet at Hardee's. There's no way that Hardee's is number 6 on any list. Hardee's is your last option at the end of the day. There's...
Ooh, I
like Hardee's?
Yeah, Hardee's is good.
Fast food expert here likes Hardee's.
Have you had that heart attack burger that they have over at Hardee's? It's supposed to be jam packed full of bacon. It was really big in the early 2000s.
I don't remember that one.
Is Arby's good?
Yeah, they got chicken cordon bleu. It's really good.
Arby's has stepped up their game since the 5 for 5.
See, I think Arby's is so nasty.
It's expensive.
You guys both like Arby's.
The chicken
and Hardee's.
Hardee's is good. Hardee's has good fried chicken.
I'm not going to stand by Hardee's, but I'll stand by Arby's.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Number 5 on this, this is just a coincidence. I didn't even see it, but the buttermilk crispy chicken sandwich at Arby's is 5. Number 4 is the sandwich combo at Raising Cane's. I've never been to Raising Cane's. Is there a Raising Cane's around here?
Never even heard of a Raising Cane's.
Why would he throw that curveball into the top 5?
This guy's terrible. Bad at his job. I'm kidding. You're great at your job. I'm just taking issue with a couple of things in this list. Chick-fil-A sandwich at Chick-fil-A. The original is number 3. Number 2, the fried chicken sandwich at Popeye's. Come on, man. That's just silly. And number 1... the chicken in Shack at Shake Shack.
No way.
So,
no way.
Right. And first of all, Shake Shack is not fast food. Shake Shack, there's no drive-through window at Shake Shack. Mm-hmm. Shake Shack is an elite.
It's overrated, expensive burger.
Oh, no way. No, you're crazy. Shake Shack is delicious. Oh. Hamburger at Shake Shack, cheeseburger at Shake Shack, fries, milkshake.
That jalapeno
fast food
burger is pretty good.
I mean,
it's too expensive.
I respect Shake Shack.
I got a question.
Okay.
How come Wendy's spice and chicken sandwich didn't make the list?
And it was on there. Okay. It was on
should
there.
Should be in the top three.
I think it was seven.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the problem with this author or this writer is I think he had a lot of great times and family experiences at White Castle and Burger King because he was giving them some high numbers that they were not allowed.
Yeah. All right. Well, that wraps up our. I'm just telling as we wrap up the conversation on the chicken sandwich. If you like chicken sandwiches, go to Popeyes and get their chicken sandwich. You'll be very happy that you did that public service announcement from Mark Carmen and all of us at 720 WGN. Popeyes, you're welcome. All right. Now, let us discuss a very, very key issue. And that is the temperature in your home. Okay? Michael Heidemann, do you live alone? You got roommates?
I live alone. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
In a studio.
So you get to make you live in a studio alone? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That sounds so romantic. You and your guitar and living the dream. All right, so here we go. A federal program recommends that people keep their homes between 78 and 85 degrees, and the internet just went bananas today. Just absolute, I mean, it was like a fist fight to get on Twitter to say, nope, not going to do that. The guidelines are coming from Energy Star. That's a government-backed program to promote energy efficiency. And, of course, I'm not doing that. No way. One day, we're not going to have any energy around here, and you're all going to be sitting at 100 degrees, and you're going to wish it was 78. But that's cool. We're going to fight back right now. Programs suggest different settings to automate at various times. 78 when you wake up, 85 during the day when you're gone, 82 when you're sleeping. Now, I don't know what you guys are doing at home, but I can sleep in 75, no problem. 76, 77. So today, I come home. My lovely fiance, she's got the windows closed. She's got the air conditioning on. She hasn't been home for 8 hours. It's 63 degrees in there. I'm like, this is miserable. I'm freezing cold. I'm going to need a blanket to sit on the couch and watch TV. So off with the AC, open the windows. And now I've got a beautiful, it's summer out. I want to feel like it's summer. Winter's going to be here sooner than, I want to enjoy myself. So I'm peacefully, I'm sitting at home. I'm prepping the show. I'm watching the White Sox. I'm flipping to the Cubs. I'm checking out the news. I'm having a great time. I'm eating leftovers. And then she comes home and walks in and it's like, it's miserable in here. It's humid as hell. How can you stand this? I'm like, go ahead. Shut the windows. I'm going to have to go to work. I understand. Create the climate to your liking. Windows shut. Air comes on. Next thing you know, I'm back in the Arctic. And this is a battle every night. The air conditioning's on. She falls asleep. I'm still up. I know she's in bed. I sneak out of bed. I turn it off. I creak open the window just so I'm not, so I don't feel like I'm going to get pneumonia by the time it's 6 a.m. So I'm curious out there, 312-981-7200, how do you partner and get the climate to what you want? Because like as I'm getting closer and closer to marriage here, this seems like a big deal. You almost got to be aligned climate-wise, because you know when we're in the car, I'm closing the vents on my side, she's leaving them open on hers. I'm, you know, she picked me up today. I get in the car, it's freezing in there. Maybe I'm creating an issue where there's not an issue, but I think this is a thing. And now we've got the government stepping in here. Hey, this is what we need. Energy Star says homeowners can save $180 a year with a properly set programmable thermostat. Energy Star, $180 is not going to be enough of an incentive. Put $18,000 on there, and then you might get someone's attention. So just lie. I mean, everybody else is lying nowadays. Might as well just throw a number out there that makes sense that will get people to do it. $180, that barely gets you to the movies nowadays.
I can barely buy my chicken sandwiches
right.
for $180.
I mean, come on, man. U.S. Department of Energy also encourages homeowners to keep their thermostat at 78 degrees when they're home. Quote, set your thermostat as high as comfortably possible in the summer. Right. That's what you should. I mean, I think that's what people do. What is the highest temperature that I can stand The problem is we're so used to comfort our cold people out there. The highest temperature I can stand, it's 65 degrees. It's 66. It's 71. But I actually would like just some advice on partnering around temperature. I'd love to see, you know, it'd be cool if we were, like, doing some good stuff for the environment. I believe in that stuff. I know I'm crazy for doing it, but I do. But let's just bring it down into the homestead. What's the reaction in there, Michael?
It's no pun intended, but it's getting hot off the collar from the callers at the moment.
Oh, really? They're angry?
They have a little bit of stories of their own, and this is a total deal breaker too for most relationships. So this is a very hot topic,
right? It's a thing going on here. All right. Well, on that note, let's get Sean here. Sean, welcome to WGN. What do you got on this? Have I struck a nerve?
Oh, no, not at all. It's just a funny story. Okay. My grandfather was a little manipulative. Personally, my wife and I, we keep our house in the summer at 678, so we're totally fine with that. I like really warm weather. But the cool thing is you're talking about cohabitating, and my grandfather, there was a thermostat in our house and my grandmother apparently was always adjusting, and it drove him crazy. So what he did is when she was gone, he unwired it. And behind that wall was a walk-in closet, and at the base of it were a shoe rack, and underneath that, he put a new thermostat. So he had a fake thermostat for my grandma.
Wow.
And he kept it the temperature he wanted, but she always thought she was adjusting the temperature, and it worked out very kosher for them, but my grandfather was happy. So that was a very manipulative thing to do, but at the same time, both were happy. So that's how they managed to cohabitate with the temperature in the house.
So basically the placebo effect, if you will, thermostat. She thought that she was sitting there in the temperature of beautiness that she wanted, but really it was grandpa winning out. That's amazing.
Of course, grandpa was always like, I'll put it at whatever you want. That's fine. But of course, he always had it set however he wanted it. So.
That's great, Sean, but that's not going to work for me because I don't even have a thermostat. All we got, the thermostat that we have is low, medium, high. And slide it down to as cool as possible. I have no idea what the temperature is in my place. None.
Then you're doomed because you're just going to have to live with it.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for sharing, man. Appreciate you.
Yep, absolutely. Bye.
312-981-7200. Yeah, I don't have there's no thermostat in my place. I live in a building, you know, high rise. There's no temperature.
Low, medium, and high?
Low, medium, and high.
I don't even think they made that kind
That's
of
all
thermostat.
We got, man. That's all I got. We got, it's a one-bedroom apartment, and there's one, you know, one thermostat. Maybe that's normal.
Yeah, that's
right. And it's
sense.
So you can slide the old thing from like the highest down to the lowest. This is the coolest part. And then you can go low, medium, high. Those are the options.
No numbers.
No numbers. Nope. That's what I'm. That's fine. Yeah. I don't need to know the exact temperature. I know how I feel, but. That situation's not going to work. And I'm not MacGyver, man. I'm not going to be jimmying around. But that's an amazing grandpa right there.
What's your blanket situation? That has to be something different. Do you sleep with two different types of blankets? One heavy, one light?
No.
Just a single sheet?
We do the one blanket, one sheet. If we're now getting a little too personal, it's getting a little creepy. But but since you asked...
Because you want it so hot and she wants it so cold.
Well, I'm closer to the window, so I probably feel maybe I get a little more of the fresh air once she falls asleep. So I'm getting that. And it's what I, you know, I got the one leg outside the out of the comforter. Mm-hmm. I want to feel summer. I don't want my whole year to be winter. It's freezing. It's freezing in December now. It's freezing in here in January. I want to drive around in my car and I want to feel the heat. I don't mind a little sweat. Let me enjoy summer. Mm-hmm. Am I nuts here? I don't know. That's how I live my life when I'm by myself. 312-981-7200, 630 texting in. My wife is hot-blooded and sets the thermostat so low, I call our bedroom the meat locker. The meat locker. And I think I feel like that's the norm.
It is.
You go to different work environments, it's freezing cold. You're sitting there, it's the dead of summer, and you got a sweatshirt at your desk and you're wearing a hoodie because Bob, who's running the office, you know, wants it to be 62 degrees.
I love it, man. I love when it gets nice and cold like that. I wish I could have lived in a freezer, you know, when it gets hot like that. I can't take the heat because I don't want to walk around my apartment in, like, shorts and, you know, like a tank top. No, I just want to be comfy.
No shorts, man. Just do the hide a man.
Just be free.
You got a studio.
Don't hide the man.
Okay. Treat yourself. 773. Carm, when I was married, I used to use a down comforter. He had to have the temperature at 65 all summer long. Right. You're walking around in your own house in a down comforter. That's not right. 708 Energy Stark, and I'm not gonna say the word.
They're very, very aggressive.
Energy Stark can take it or can stick it. That's good. Stick it. You guys can use your imagination. Find me a home with a 50-year-old woman living in it that's willing to sleep at 82 degrees. Doesn't exist. I'll save my money in the winter. That's when I sleep at 58 degrees. You're probably right about that. I don't know if I've ever met a woman who is happy if it's not cold. That's a fair thing.
Yeah, we were talking about church a little bit earlier. The reason they have fans is to keep, you know, people cool those hot churches.
I love a good fan. give me a fan in the summertime.
How about one of those misters?
Yeah, right. A mister would be great.
For the apartment use, though, I don't know if that your fiance would like that.
You get hot, you go into the bathroom, you get a little cold water on you. It's like going swimming for a second, you come back out.
You're living in the jungle, basically, but it's just your apartment.
Yeah. All right, let's move along. Quick timeout, 720 WGN. Very important topics being covered tonight on 720 WGN. What's the thermostat at your house? We got reports from the government. Energy Star, got to keep your temperature at 78 degrees when you wake up, 85 during the day, 82 degrees when you're sleeping. Could be heading here someday, team. Could be getting there someday. I know we're fighting it right now. So I'm just asking, what kind of climate you living in? Because I like it warm, and my fiance does not. 815 says, I'm a woman, and my thermostat is set at 77 all the time in the summer. You are an amazing woman. Congratulations. Different 815 thermostat is set to 71, and I still sweat. Hey, these things happen. So somehow sweating became a bad thing. Everyone says it's, you know, he sweats too much. Sweating is good. You're cleaning the pores. You're getting it out. Mm-hmm. Your body's processing things. What's wrong with a little sweat? Sweating feels great. When I go and I play, you know, a sport, do I want to sweat? Yes, I do. When I go into yoga and I'm sweating, you know what I'm doing? I'm winning. It's a victory. If you're just sitting at home and you're sweating, don't feel bad about it. Feel good about it. It's great. You're cleansing yourself.
You want to wake up in like a hot sweat when you're getting up from...
Agreed, that's not great. But
in the morning.
Agreed, that's not
eating
great.
Eating your cereal just pouring over the bowl.
But imagine, like, you're sitting... I'm having my cereal. I'm sweating. I'm working out eating Cheerios. This is the new...
But you're standing still and sweating.
It's all right. It's like, do you go to the sauna?
I do go to the sauna, yeah.
Why do you do that?
To sweat after the workout, but I don't wake up or like at 6 a.m. and think, oh, you know what would be great right now? Just sweating until, like, uncontrollably.
Well, you know, you're not going to do it all the time. Mm-hmm. It's summer doesn't last forever, but a little sweat in the summertime, like, oh, this is great. I'm sweating in my place. This is awesome. We've conditioned ourselves to think it's bad, but it's actually good.
Mm-hmm. You're going purely for the health benefits here.
Health benefits, aliveness. You know, it's cool. My body's engaged.
Yeah, it's like a melting snowman all day long. Yeah. Did you used to live with roommates back in college and everything?
College, after college.
So the only other argument that is worse than with your significant other, it's with the guys you live with in an apartment about the thermostat, because everyone runs a different cooling hot.
That's why I always lived with women.
Oh, that's. Really?
Yes.
That was a genius move.
Yeah. Well, in college, I lived with dudes. Although, the dude that I lived with was very feminine in the way he took care of the house. I mean, he was an organized, professional, non-slob. So that was nice. Thank you, Kevin Gresh. You were a leader. You taught me lots of things. But then
you had the rare occurrence of being with somebody who keeps their apartment in check.
Yeah, I mean, I lived with Kate and Amy for years. We had a good 5-year stint. I did the Jack Tripper lifestyle from about 25 to 30.
Wow.
It was very enjoyable.
Kept that thermostat at 80 all the time, too.
They were economical women, if I remember. I don't remember ever having a thing with the thermostat with them.
Okay. Okay. Well, then that's helpful.
So I chose well in my roommate life. It was beautiful.
You did. I did not. Every single morning, you would be like, I'd be like, Marshall, please turn off it, because ours was. I lived in the cheapest of cheap apartments, and you know, rent was like $300 in southern Utah, where it was hot, and like every morning he'd put that on and it would just go goo, and just rattle the entire house, and he had no problem with it, but it would drive me bonkers.
Why were you in southern Utah?
That's where I went to college.
At Southern Utah University?
Yes, in Cedar City.
Is that really a school?
Surprisingly, yes.
You went to Southern. Why?
It was a great school, actually. It's very affordable. It's away from everything, all distractions. You're surrounded by mountains, except for the.
You went to Southern Utah University.
Yes, go T-Birds.
A public university in Cedar City, Utah. Founded in 1897 as a normal school. I don't know what that means.
It's a normal school.
As opposed to a non-normal school. Southern Utah University graduates 1,800 students each year mm-hmm. with a bachelorette and graduate degrees from its 6 colleges. This is fascinating. Learn about you right now, Michael Heidemann.
Yeah.
Southern Utah University. Did you just want to get away from everyone? Might as well open up your own bunker.
It was in the middle of nowhere. It was.
These are beautiful pictures, though. Wow, it looks gorgeous.
It's an amazing, amazing landscape surrounding the school, but it did only have one Walmart. There were no like bars or anything like that around us for hundreds of miles. It was a very interesting place to live. I started at DePaul University and moved and transitioned into Southern Utah just to focus a little bit more, I guess.
Focus or not focus? Just
focus.
Chill out. You were focused.
Yeah.
What'd you graduate with?
Communications degree.
You went to Southern Utah University for communications. That's amazing. That's one of the greatest developments that I've heard. That's awesome.
I won broadcast journalism, so I mean, it was just a good way to. You were a big fish in a small sea. We can say that.
Southern Utah University is mm-hmm. the Syracuse of the mountain region.
That's what they say. That's on the bumper sticker.
Is that in the Southern Utah University is a caring campus community where students come to explore their interests and prepare for meaningful careers and life experiences. How are you doing on that?
They got to really update that website. it sounds really lame.
With more than 145 undergraduate programs with an asterisk on it.
Oh, geez.
And 18 graduate, located in the world's best backyard. SUU, Southern Utah University, is the University of the Parks, thanks to its close proximity to several outdoor recreational areas where you can smoke extensive amount of marijuana, and we will not bother you. It doesn't say that.
I'm gonna send this to the school.
SUU's safe residential campus allows students to create lifelong friendships with Marshall, who's going to move the thermostat when you're sleeping.
That son of a...
Yeah, along with a once-in-a-lifetime outdoor adventure in conjunction with innovative academic endeavors. That's very confusing. I'm amazed that you chose this. The soliloquy here is feels a little bit off. But okay, that's awesome, Michael. Did you graduate?
Yes, I did. I did graduate.
Oh, well, okay.
Thank you, SUU.
SUU, the what's?
Thunderbirds.
The Thunderbirds. Do they have what? Let's see here. College.
I could talk about this all day long. It was a very interesting experience to go there. It was 99% Mormon. It was people ran very hot, like I had mentioned before, as far as like thermostat wise. Great school for running.
Good school for running.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a football team and a mascot.
Yeah, I think we had somebody go to the Cowboys a few years ago, too.
There we go. Mm-hmm. All right, let's take a quick timeout. Do we have a timeout here? We do?
Yes, we do.
Okay. We'll get news in 2 minutes. 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Mark Carmen with you till 1 o'clock. Nick D warming up in the bullpen. Just took a walk around the campus here. Nick looks super focused, ready to rock and roll, as per always, coming up. So, Michael Heidemann, congratulations on Southern Utah University. Now I'm going to ask you a bigger question. Are you planning on having kids someday?
Yeah, I can see that in my foreseeable future.
Okay. Congratulations for seeing
was that,
that.
Was just going to end it at that, move on to a new topic?
No.
I mean, it's a very scary question, that's for sure.
I'm bringing it up for a reason, and I'm going to throw it out to the crowd here. Headline, having kids makes you happier once they've moved out. Ouch. Having children will make you happier than staying childless. That's according to a new study. But not until later in life when they have flown the nest. Team of researchers, Heidelberg University, Dateline, Germany. They found that parents tend to be happier than non-parents in old age. But this only holds if their kids have actually moved out. Now, anybody, parents who are up right now, late at night, is this true? Because I feel like, I see people being terrified of being empty nesters. They're going to miss their kids.
Mm-hmm. Tears involved, probably.
Billy and Bobby and Susie and Sammy and Mark and Michael. They're going to miss them.
Mm-hmm.
What are they going to do? But then now we got a study that says that, parents are actually happier when you're out of the house. And they don't have to think about you every day, and they no longer have to make you lunch and breakfast and all that.
I can tell you one thing for sure. My parents seem to be having a hell of a good time lately. Like, I'm gone, Adam's gone, and they, like, go on trips all the time. They just got back from 2 days at Irish Fest in Milwaukee. They're going to, like, the Packers game, like, coming up. And,
right.
Like, all these trips. And I'm like, aren't you guys tired? They're like, no, we have tons of energy now.
Scientists asked 55,000 people aged 50 and over from 16 European countries about their mental well-being. And results suggest, quote, the positive aspects of parenthood dominate when getting older. One of the biggest factors is that children become a form of social support. So they're older, they can help make your life better, give some wisdom, partner with you, rather than just being that pain in the rear 10-year-old, 12-year-old, 14-year-old.
Mm-hmm. You give nothing to them when you're that age.
See, I thought I was great. But maybe I wasn't.
Were you well behaved?
For the most part.
No trouble?
I was arrested in college. That happened. But that was, that was a fluke situation. Chicago Bulls game 4, 1993 NBA Finals, trying to sneak into the stadium. Didn't work out. Dad had to come down to Harrison on the south side or west side. Get me out of there, along with girlfriend Katie at the time. That was a rough one. But other than that, I mean, that's just one. One of the biggest factors is children become a form of social support, and the researchers point out that social support networks are associated with greater happiness, less loneliness. So they can call you up when you're older. They can come over, have a glass of wine, have a steak, talk about life. Do your parents ever do that?
They do come up a bunch and visit, and we do all those things. I mean, just I think 2 weekends ago we went out for steaks and had wine together, which was enjoyable because now it's like we're on the same level, and now I can kind of see through the facade of when you're growing up, you're like, they have all the answers, they know everything, and I'm like, oh, we're kind of on the same page with a lot of things, which is an interesting part about growing up.
Well, it's a beautiful thing right there.
Yeah.
224 texting, 22-year-old out of the house. He's my best friend. 15-year-old in the house. Can't wait for him to leave. There it is. You are the study, 224. That's just, I don't know. That feels like you should cherish the time that you have with your children. For me, my biggest terror, I'd love to get there someday. That'd be great. But the whole baby thing, I don't know if I'm built for that.
you don't know if you can handle the baby.
The crying, the spitting up, the changing the diapers.
Oh, so many diapers.
So many diapers, so little time. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to reorient to this is going to be something that's fun. I don't know if I can, I don't know. I don't know if I'm feeling that one.
Well, that, I mean,
I hope it happens. I'm sure I'll love it. But that part, like, I think a little 5-year-old is following me around and get to play tennis with them. That seems sweet. Or even if they're not into sports, whatever. We're doing some arts and crafts. Great. A baby holding its head. And I don't know what I'm doing. Awkward. I don't trust myself in that situation.
Who's awkward? You or the baby?
Me. Me. The kid's doing what a kid does.
You can't.
I'm the problem.
You need to feed them from those teeny little jars too, Mark, and you get it.
Right. Oh, man. Right.
But I heard, you know, I'm sure you talk to your friends all the time who have babies. You just kind of figure it out, right? But you're also say goodbye to fun for the next 18 years. Like every single weekend is going to be spent with that child.
Right. Let's get on the ground and let's play, throw the. Let's play. I don't know. What are they? Let's play trucks. let's play roll the ball.
Gotta get some games ready before you have that first baby.
I'm gonna be terrible.
Remember all those like great sneakers that you collected all over the years and everything.
Right.
They won't
care about that at all.
Nope. They're gonna be chew toys now. That's what they're gonna be.
Yeah. That's not
that Jordan autograph that you have like sitting.
Won't care about that either.
That's going to be a coloring book, actually, now, and it's just going to happen all downhill.
Right. Well, all I just say is we take a quick time out here, that study did not surprise me in the least. You're happier when they're gone. Everyone says, you got to have kids, Eh. You know what? You know when parents are happy? When the kids are gone. Mm-hmm. When they're actually adults and they can like do adult things and go on trips and don't have to, in theory, worry about them at least as much. Although you're always a parent, right?
How many kids do you think you'd be aiming for in the long run?
Oh, let's go for two. Can we get to two?
Two's a good...
I've just turned 46 years old here, pal. That's although young. I know that nowadays, you know, people are having kids when they're 65. But that just feels old to me. I mean, I don't know. You know, if I was fortunate enough to have two kids by the time I was 50, figure I live to what 95 with the amount of health that I have,
with all the sweat that you have going on,
right?
You're going to be living way past 95.
I mean, I got to be able to be around and give them some wisdom here. I hate doing the math on this.
Yeah, you'll be playing tennis at least till like 86.
Right, tennis till 86. All right, I'm starting to get hot and sweaty here. We're going to play a tune coming out to wrap it up here, coming on back here. Quick timeout, 720 WGN. So drove around town today, eating chicken sandwiches. But I still feel like I'm fit. I still feel like I've got it together, even though I went to Wendy's, Popeye's, KFC, and Chick-fil-A all in one day. My friend Amber Gideon, she's got a song. It's called Skinny Fat. It's sweeping the nation. So give it a listen.
It's a take your bra off kind of meal. Deep dish pizza, man, you know how I feel. Ran 10 miles, it won't matter. Nothing I do makes my abs any flatter. Jeans say skinny, cankles scream fat. Oh my God, I'm skinny fat. A twig in a gummy bear wrap. I'm skinny fat. Planks all day, form that definition. All undone with just an hour in the kitchen. I asked for fries, not these thunder thighs. Think I'll need these in a bigger size. Jeans say skinny, cankles scream fat. Oh my God, I'm skinny fat. Slim with the marshmallow back. I'm skinny fat. Tied to the touch. Flick it for a wig just a dash of jiggle. Jeans say skinny, cankles scream fat. Oh my God, I'm skinny fat. Chicken legs with the jello wrap. I'm skinny fat. Skinny, but I'm fat, but still kind of skinny, but really fat.
Way to go, Amber. What do you think, Michael Heidemann? You're a musical savant.
Wow. I was almost brought to tears by that. That was a really, really catchy and really good song.
It sums it all up, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Kind of does.
Yeah. No, she worked hard on that one.
You know this artist?
I do. I thought that one sort of fit into my day. So, you know, little song to wrap up the show. We rarely do that, but figured it was appropriate for the evening. Real fast here, just get a drop of a touch of sports in here. Ricky Renteria spoke out about sabermetrics today before the White Sox game, as he was asked about his lineup and whatnot, and Ricky got a little bit upset, saying he's not going to just do what the book says all the time. So as we're wrapping up here, I just want to throw a shout-out to my man Ricky Renteria, who—that's right, Ricky. You do not need to do what the book says all the time. You know why? Because you're the manager, and they pay you to be the manager. They don't pay you to sit there and look at stats all day long and figure out what the right thing to do is. You know your players. You have a sense of what's going on. You use the stats. You boil that in. It helps you make decisions. It informs you. But I like a manager who, you know, will go with a hunch and his gut and will do things a little bit unconventional every now and then. And Ricky does a ton by the book, too. So let's not, I just thought that was good to hear a little fire over there. And on the other side of town, Cubs have now won 3 in a row. They won their first road series since May, although the third game of that series was in Williamsport, PA at a Little League stadium. So it's, I mean, it was technically a home game for the Pirates, but you could kind of, they weren't really on the road on Sunday, but then they got a couple homers from Rizzo last night. Cole Hamels pitched well. They're still a half game back of the St. Louis Cardinals. And I just have a nauseous feeling that somehow, some way, the Cardinals are going to end up getting this done. They play 4 times, the Cubs and Cardinals do, in September at Wrigley. And the last 3 games of the year are in St. Louis. Now, if this ends up that the Cardinals beat the Cubs in the last game of the year, the Cubs miss the playoffs, the Cardinals go in, and Joe Maddon gets fired, I am just not on board for that. That is not the way this World Series window of Rizzo and Bryant and whatnot, that's not the way this should end. But I'm sort of getting this nauseous intuition that that's what's going to happen on the north side. So, and one more thing on the south side. Luis Robert had another homer today. If you haven't heard about Luis Robert, he's a center fielder at AAA Charlotte. This guy's going to be a STUD stud. White Sox are going to be very much in contention for the playoffs next year. That you might be hearing playoff baseball on 720 WGN come about a year and a month from now. That's optimistic, but I do think it's in play that the White Sox will be right there. So now I'll get my sports fix out. Just feel a little bit better there. I am back in the morning tomorrow, sitting in with Ji Suk Yee and Dave Bennett, of course, and Mary Vandeveld and Steve Grzanich. So looking forward to seeing you in about 5 hours. Thank you tonight to Brian Souter, our reverend, the executive director of Faith in Place, who stopped by the studio tonight. It was great to have him in here. Michael Heidemann, thank you so much, sir, as per always. And, yes, of course, Nick D, coming on up.